How do you love God? Welcome to The Good Word, presented by the School of Theology, a commentary on our Sabbath School lessons. Our host for today's lesson is Matilda Fry. She is also the author of the study guide. Our conversation partners are Jody Washburn and Alden Thompson. All right, Matilda, you're on.
Thank you so much, Alden. This lesson is all about love. And when I studied this book of Deuteronomy closer, I was surprised we have the word love so many times in this, many more times than in the other books in the Pentateuch. So it is about 23 times here. And it has a direct, specific verse, for example, in chapter 6, verse 4 and 5. Hear, O Israel, the Lord is our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your might. Love. How do we do that? How do we love God?
Let me press you on that word love. How does ahav, the Hebrew word for love, compare with the New Testament terms for love? I think in particularly of agape love. But there are other words for love as well. And in English, love could be a very messy word. So can you tell us a little bit about what ahav means?
We can start by saying it's a verb.
It's a verb.
Yes, it's not a fluffy feeling. It's a verb, which means love is an action, you know?
Uh-huh.
I think that's one important thing to note when we read this in the Hebrew.
Yeah.
And in the biblical stories, it is always in relation to the aspect of doing good to someone who needs it.
Okay.
So doing justice, making sure that the person who needs help is provided that. And so the word love in the stories of the Old Testament is connected to being a righteous person who does good for those who need it most. And especially in the book of Deuteronomy, that is always in relation to the people who are on the margins, the widows and the orphans and the stranger and so on. So it's prominent there as we have it here in this book. We do have also the references to another book that we maybe often overlook when it comes to love, to Leviticus 19, where Jesus is directly using that specific verse to love to love your neighbor as yourself, isn't it?
Yes.
Now it's I think important to note that Jesus is quoting the Old Testament, but Jesus gives it a much sharper focus. Because he gives a much clearer hierarchical nature. Two great commands, love to God, love your neighbor. And I think it's easier in the Old Testament to see a host of laws, not in a particular hierarchical form, but in the New Testament, I think it seems to be clearly a hierarchy. And interestingly enough, when Jesus summarizes his message in its simplest form, he doesn't start with the first command, love God. He starts with the second. In everything, do to others as you would have them do to you. This is the law and the prophets. So it boils down, how do you treat people? And I think that's very important because, you know, many of our ways of looking at the Bible and its teachings can be very complex. But even a child, even a person with fairly low IQ, can understand what it means to treat others the way you would want to be treated if you were in their place.
I think Jesus has the great opportunity to use those words, those laws, and put them into specific and direct connection to the lives of people that he meets
right
on the streets. And that is maybe what makes it so relevant and so sharp in that text, in those texts in the Gospels. Right? Because now it's not only a law among others and in a written document, but now it is put into actual practice, if you will, in the speeches and sermons of Jesus and actions.
Yeah, and again, this is a call for discernment. I mean, you ask, what is love? You know, what does this look like? What does this mean? And it makes me think of one of the prayers of confession in Jewish, I guess we would call it the sets of prayers that are prayed. This one particular that I recently heard at a service that I attended is entitled Al Chet. And there's a specific line in there, right? It's the whole thing is all of these confessions. And it says, we have sinned against you through hardening of our hearts. And you think in terms of the relationship, right? When our hearts are hard, we want to label everyone. You're in, you're out. Oh, you need to do this, right? And we tell people how they should apply some law in the Pentateuch, right? Out of this long list. And it seems to me that when Jesus took these two lines from different parts of the Pentateuch and put them, right, like together, like almost like he was saying, you want to know what it looks like to love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your mind, all your strength. It looks like loving yourself and loving your neighbor, right? That's what it looks like. And in doing this, we maintain this soft, open heart that then, right, that this trajectory going toward Jeremiah that Alden, you mentioned, that our hearts are soft enough to receive this inscribing of the law to function in that deeply open way.
One of the key illustrations in Scripture that I think is important, you talk about the softening of the heart. He's going to take out the heart of stone.
Yes.
And give us a heart of flesh. Yeah. That's a powerful image of what we need to do. Ask God to give us a heart of flesh, so that we're sympathetic to others.
Now, we mentioned that also in the language and in the context of the book, that love is put in relation with doing, acting on it. On the other side, we live in a world where the great words of the song, "All You Need Is Love," have maybe turned into words that have become almost empty sometimes. We can say them, but is it really enough to keep a relationship going when we only speak of love? Is that really enough? When we think of actual daily living with somebody else and we say, "I love you," is that enough?
Well, in a sense, if love is properly understood, it is enough, because it includes all the small things, the little things that we do to encourage a relationship and to make it go. And it's terribly important to keep up those little attentions. You know, it's kind of famous that married couples say they're very attentive in their first year of marriage, but then they tend to fall off. But that really is part of love, is to keep up those little attentions.
I'd be curious to know what you all think about the translation of the Shema, you know, where it says, "Love the Lord your God." I recognize that there is some debate about how that word should be translated, and the debate, as I understand it, centers on this idea that if you command someone, love, right, that's not love. Okay, and so some people say, no, you should translate it as a description, right? Because you acknowledge this Yahweh, this God, right, the one God, then you will love, right? This is a description. Other people say, absolutely, it should be understood as a command. And I just find this discussion interesting, I guess, because there are times in life when we can cultivate love. I think, like what you're saying, Alden, we can choose to do small actions and be attentive and cultivate love. There are other times when perhaps we experience this deep sense of belonging, connection, love, relationality, you know, connection to the people around us, this loving, maybe a feeling, a connection, as a gift, almost like it comes out of a vacuum, like God gives it to us as a gift, and out of that we flow our relationship with people.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you have thoughts on the translation, but it always fascinates me, that discussion.
You know, I think our understanding of the translation is colored by the way we use command words, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Like this imperative language that we feel belongs into the authoritarian world. So you follow a command, whereas in the biblical world, in the biblical text, you can have grammar words that correspond to command, and yet they convey that urgency instead, and not like the push from above.
Yeah.
Could
yeah.
it be
yeah.
said in that way?
You know, one of the questions that you raised in its connection with the Shema, "Hear, O Israel," that you closed your study guide with is an intriguing one, Matilda. You say, could it be that God needs us to listen to him? Could it be that he wants us to hear his pain? How would it look like if we would truly show empathy for the God we so often say we love? I think that's a fascinating question.
And very fitting for a book like Deuteronomy that paints the picture of this relationship as much more interdependent,
yeah.
where God is inviting people in.
Yeah.
To engage, right? To go back and forth in dialogue.
I think we could say that love cannot be commanded. It can be described, but it can't be commanded.
You see, I'm thinking of these stories of those people who go through all those places and to walk for a lifetime through a desert and be in a constant concern, how do I survive? Maybe to like think of these stories in a much more personal way, as we did a few weeks ago about mm-hmm. the storytelling of these stories, actually, and living them, putting ourselves into the shoes of the people instead of coming from the outside and putting our judgments on them. And so mm-hmm. when we read about love that comes from God and love that should be like the loyal response to this God, then clearly then we should come to understand that God has walked with them through those 40 years. And God himself has felt, if you will, that pain and those concerns and those questions. So to listen in to the story is also to understand something of that life of God.
And that's what the prophets do when they use this as a reflection. You know, they feel with God.
Yeah. Thank you so much for this lesson this week. Thank you, our engineer, Harrison Krushel, Alden Thompson, and Jody Washburn, my conversation partners. I am Matilda Fry.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.